Today we announce that the philosophy of the school in the new generation will be the philosophy of government in the next. So when you eliminate the word God from the classroom and politics, you eliminate the nation that word protects. America is now number one in teen pregnancy and violent crime, number one in illiteracy, drug use, and divorce. Every day in the Holocaust, 5,000 unborn die. Pornography floods our streets with those America's dead and dying hand is on the threshold of the church, while the spirit of Sodom and Gomorrah affects us all. When it gets to the point where people would rather come out of the closet than clean it, it's the sign that judgment of God is going to fall. If there's ever been a time to rise up, church, it's now. And as the blood-bought saints of the living God proclaim, it's time to sound the alarm from the church house to the White House and say, we want God in America again.
Good evening, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. But please hold your calls here for a few minutes. Now, this is we have with us this evening Beverly Ekman. And Beverly has been a teacher for many years, but she's written a number of books, one of which we carry, called The Cloning of the American Mind. And it goes into really what's happening in our schools today, and really from the point of view of the testing that is being done on our students. And then, of course, the fact that the schools are keeping dossiers on our children, and not simply about, their academic accomplishments, but about their attitudes and beliefs and values. And that, of course, these are being carefully monitored, passed along. They become part of a permanent dossier, and the question is, well, they become part of a lifetime dossier for Big Brother, for the George Orwellian Society of the Future. So with that as a background, let's say hello to Beverly Ekman. How are you doing, Beverly?
I'm just fine, Dr. Stan.
Well, it's good to have you with us. And tell us why don't you explain to our listeners listening out across America really what your concern is?
Well, my concern is that as cross-matching of computerized data becomes more mandated, increasingly mandated, easier and faster, and that computers talk to each other, shall we say, that's part of the compatibility mandate from the federal government to the states and locals, dossier building is not only possible, but probable. I mean, it's just too easy. And the new form of our national ID will be probably a microchip, and you can get an awful lot of information on one of those. And in the process of all of this data out there, the just sheer volume and the frequency of the questionnaires that are asked in school, sometimes as part of tests, sometimes as standalone surveys, by the time you get through cross-matching that with health records, with credit card references, with telephone numbers that you dial frequently, with your subscriptions from your magazine subscriptions, newspaper subscriptions, the powers that be can have a pretty good fix on where you're coming from politically and start instigating political litmus tests against or for any child who is seeking positions of leadership and influence. And usually that starts at the university level by where they go to school and what they major in. And already I'm getting a lot of feedback from parents that indicates that this political litmus test is already very much in use. And the thing is, the child never knows it. I mean, he ends up, he takes maybe an entrance exam, and there are some of those kinds of questions in there. But when he gets to the oral interview, at the end of that, what the university can say is, well, you know, I think that maybe this just isn't a good match. You know, I know you got wonderful SAT scores, and I wish you the best of luck wherever you go, but I don't think this is a good match. And you never really know why. It's not really provable, but, you know, with all that information out there that's going automatically via a computer program called WorkLink and Speedy Express straight into the university offices and even into the workplace, into your prospective employer, this is getting too easy.
Now, the thing that bothers me is that these tests really are not to test, academic excellence. In fact, they don't really seem to be that interested in academics.
No, they really seem
to be interested in attitude, belief, what your parents, don't they ask a lot of intimate questions about parents?
Yes.
Aren't they really collecting a dossier on the thought process, not only of the child, but of the parent?
Right. Right. If you can get the parent first, so much the better. The way it actually works is that when they start with very young children, of course, the opinion that is given is usually that of the parent when they ask a question, because the child hasn't really formed an opinion yet. As time goes on and he answers those same questions in a different format, what they're looking for is, does the child answer the same question in the way that the school is instilling or the same old way that the parent has been instilling? If he's answering it the way the school is instilling, then that's good news for the school. They've done their job. They've altered the curriculum enough to where they can replace the old value system with a new one. If he's still using traditional values and he's still playing by the traditional rules or being seen to do so, then, you know, they've got a problem. They've got a problem with that child.
Yeah, and I kind of think it should be so important, really, for parents and for grandparents to understand that the purpose of education is not to teach the child reading, writing, and arithmetic. It is to alter them and to mold them into this new idealistic citizen of this new world order that these intellectuals believe in. It's one where you will not be an individual. You will be part of the group. It was not where you will be striving for perfection. You'll be striving just to get along. It will not be one where you strive for excellence, but for accommodation.
Being a team player is one of the most important things they're looking for, is whether the child will be a team player. If he's still an individualist, if he's an independent thinker, that is not what they're looking for.
And I think that's so difficult for people to understand unless they understand that there is a philosophy among certain people in education that the purpose of education is to remold the child and destroy the values that have been put into them by parents. And I'm sure you probably heard that wonderful quotation, and you probably know who said it rather than I, but that every child when they enter school is sick, and it is the purpose of schools to actually cure that illness, that mental illness that has been indoctrinated in them in the home. And, of course, this is why here in California, even with our financial crisis, they're talking about wanting to start children at age 3 in schools, in preschool. It's not that they really want to help the parents. They want to begin to get the mind of the child and
that's
the heart
right.
and the soul of the child earlier.
Yes, that's absolutely true. And it's very important. When they say a new world for new world order, they aren't kidding. They really mean that some of the values that our founding fathers articulated in the Bill of Rights, in the Declaration of Independence, and so on and so forth, the Constitution, those are not the values that they want to see promulgated. They don't feel that those values anymore have worth, and that that we're sitting in a brand new age. So they have a problem. They can't tell kids, at least not like the Soviet Union, like the old Soviet Union did, just point blank, you know, if you have thus and so values, we'll shoot you, you know. But they can do it more subtly. There can be repercussions. Ostracism and ridicule is one of the key tactics that are used, and actually that is a Marxist tactic, to be honest about it. It's called the theory of alienation, and it basically says that most people will do anything to avoid ridicule and ostracism from their peers. So if they can get them very peer-oriented, very popularity-oriented, and that gives you an excuse of why that's going on, of why children are being, not just in the entertainment world, but in school, are being pushed to go along, to get along, and to be popular with their peers, you know, lowering of the dress codes and so on was all part of that, because they don't want kids who think for themselves and who want to distinguish themselves as individuals. They want kids who will hide in a social group and will find the group more important than their principles.
And, of course, do you think the average teacher really understands what this is about, or is simply the people who are there at the upper echelons of administration who realize really the major thrust of education today?
Definitely at the upper echelons. They understand it very well. And, in fact, I have a page now that I sometimes, you know, will email to people and stuff that just have the names of the major players who have engineered all this. But teachers today, you know, they are not drawn from the top of the, you know, they're not the crack. And I don't mean crack like dope. I mean, you know, the really hot people academically. They're not the sharpest tacks in the drawer, you know. And so they're drawn from the second and even third and fourth echelons down. And, you know, they usually go into the profession because they think they're going to get more time off. Or they think it'll be easier. They'll have summers. They'll, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And so these people are not particularly interested in the whys and wherefores. They just do their job. You know, you've heard that expression, I'm just doing my job. And that is the mindset of these people that are teaching today, most of them.
Well, I think really that the tragedy is that the parents really don't know. They imagine that the schools are as when they went to school, of course, mm-hmm. and they do not understand that these are being used for social engineering. Of course, the real tragedy is that, that with the new administration in, nothing has really changed. I know George Bush said that what he wanted to do was to return control of the education to the local community and to the local school board and to the parent. And those are beautiful words. It's just what I believe. But the truth of the matter is that the new education bill does exactly the opposite, 180 degrees opposite. Yep. It centralizes all authority with the Department of Education now, which will put out tests for the children. And if the children's attitudes and beliefs, if their belief in God is still there, why the school has failed. If their belief in family and certainly their belief in America, our values, our Bill of Rights are still there. They're not dedicated to world government. Why, of course, the teachers are not doing their job and they're going to have to do a better job. And people can't believe this thing could be going on. But that's because they're not sitting in the schoolroom and they're not talking to people as I do and as I'm sure you do, Beverly, yep. on a regular basis who know what's really going on in the school and are appalled, not only because it's going on, but by the apathy of the parents and, of course, because of silence of the churches. Now, every school should be a church. Every school should be educating children and bringing them up in the ways of the Lord, instead of turning them over to a secular school where the faith is destroyed and even all the efforts of the Sunday school is undermined during the rest of the week.
That's right.
You cannot bring a child up in the way of the Lord and then turn them over to a school where the children are taught that the Bible is completely wrong and the prayer is outlawed and there is an antagonism towards the Word of God.
That's true. And even if you wanted to say that, well, you could separate the church from the school, even if you wanted to go that far. As you say, there is a direct antagonism. The children are getting a mixed message, and the message that they're getting from the school is all religion is a bunch of silly myths. And if you want to believe that stuff, that's fine. Just don't get caught bringing it to school. So as long as that mindset is being purveyed 5 days a week, at least 7 hours a day, then you send them to Sunday school, or you have your parents instilling different values. You're setting up a very psychological dissonance is what it's technically called, but it's a battle within the child. And he's got two authority figures there, one telling him one thing and one telling him another. The school's an authority figure and the church is an authority figure and the parents an authority figure. You've got three of them. And he doesn't know which way to go and winds up extremely confused. And this confusion certainly does not help his mental development.
No, it certainly doesn't. And this is why, our children are having real problems today. And certainly, then of course, all these tests that they're doing now, this is where you really have been looking into it. Aren't a lot of these tests really asking very intimate and personal details about the child that the state, the government, has no right to know?
Yes, and that's what's got me extremely worried. And I put a lot of these test questions into my book and into my articles as far as that goes. But, I mean, they get really down and dirty. Do you regard yourself as a bigot? Do you think the United States was stolen from Native Americans or that it was rightfully colonized by Europeans? Talk about a leading question. Have you ever rolled up your car windows in a predominantly minority neighborhood? I mean, and then which of the above is Irish Americans, Hispanic American, Italian American, African American, Eastern Indian American, British American, French American, et cetera, Protestants, Jews, Catholics. Which of the above do you think is responsible for the decline of the U.S. economy? Now, you got to choose from one of these groups. You can't say none, okay? Which of the above do you think is more likely to raise a large family? Would you ever associate with someone of the same sex who was either rumored or self-declared homosexual? Why and why not? Which of the above do you think is the most subject to criminal activity? Which of the above do you think would be most likely to eliminate an entire race? Who has influenced most the way you feel about other races? If you would, like, if you could eliminate an entire race, would you? And if yes, which one?
Now, that is a wonderful question. Which race would you want? I mean, what are the ideas are they trying to put into children's minds? And
that's
of course, what is the right answer to that?
That's it. There is no right or wrong answer. It's a fishing expedition.
Right, and they're trying to really find your worldview, the worldview of the child.
That's right.
Now, this becomes then part of their permanent record. And are these records ever purged, or are these going to follow them through their life? And is the government being forthright about what's happening with these records?
Well, let me put it this way. They can be purged, of course, but there's no way you can prove that you have purged a computerized record. I mean, how do you prove a disk doesn't exist somewhere? There is no way that I know of you can do that. And as far as cross-referencing it, do they cross-reference everything on everybody right now today? No. It would be prohibitively expensive. But it is sitting there in a computer somewhere, and if the child, as he grows, sufficiently irritates somebody important, if he becomes a nuisance to someone important, if he aspires to some kind, say, of political candidacy, or he wants to be a journalist, or he wants to, in some other way, be in a position of leadership, then all this stuff can be trotted out and cross-referenced with other information. I mean, other parts of the questions is, do you have indoor plumbing? Is there exposed wiring in your home? How many bedrooms are in your house? Do your parents have stocks and bonds? I mean, we're talking about an awful lot of questions in different places at different times. Sometimes they're on the cover sheet of an academic, supposedly, test. Sometimes they're just on a survey.
And I think that the problem is that the average individual doesn't know, the grandparent doesn't know. That's why the churches should get the children out of government schools. That's why everybody who loves their children should get them out of government schools. And the great tragedy is, of course, we're losing a generation. We've already lost a generation of children, and we will lose this generation as well. And when, of course, you lose a generation of children, eventually you lose the nation. So we're going to be right back here in just a few moments with Beverly Eckman. We'll talk about her book, The Cloning of the American Mind. You want to know about it, but you can give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you'd like more information. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Beverly Eckman. We're talking about the cloning of the American mind, this idea that there is an organized, orchestrated effort to have, of course, all children think and believe the same. It really goes back to the concepts. Well, we could go back to Rousseau. He talked about this sort of thing, but it was back in the 1830s when a man named Robert Owen came to America. He was a very wealthy British industrialist, and he set up a commune, a communal society in a place called New Harmony, Indiana, and this was to be a perfect communist society. But the trouble is that communism doesn't work because you have a lot of individuals, and when the society crumbled, he decided that the way to change it was through education. And if we were going to have this utopia, this place, this idealistic society that he sought and his followers sought, that they would have to gain control of the minds of the children. And at least according to Orestes Bronstein, who was one of his followers, why they set up a covert society and began working to take over education. Bronstein eventually became a Christian and wrote about extensively about what they were doing. But that thread has been there going all the way back to the 1830s, but it's really only been in recent years that it's become so very obvious what they were up to. But they use public education to really steal the soul of our children. So what can we do, Beverly? What can the average person out there in the listening audience who hears this program do? I mean, after all, we have our local school board, but they're really impotent. They can't change this, can they?
Well, you know, there are some things that we can do if we really mean business. And one of the things, in fact, I'm writing about it in an article right now, is to, and I have it on my website, by the way, it's a parental in a consent notice. And what you do is you send this letter to your principal, your school principal, and the superintendent in the district right at the beginning of the school year, telling them what kinds of questions and activities are off limits. And then the last paragraph says, well, you know, I'm really sorry we have to do this in this day and age, but for your protection and mine, I'm keeping this on file with my lawyer. Now, you know, it only costs around $75. You know, a little bit more, a little bit less, depending on where you live, but not, you know, it's not astronomical to have a letter on file with your attorney. And if enough parents will do this, and I've gotten a lot of parent groups to do it, it will give the districts pause about doing something without your knowledge or consent. And then the other thing you do is you teach your kids to avoid groupthink. And I have a chapter on that in my book. Plus, I go all over the country now giving seminars, and that's one small part of the seminar, is explaining exactly how this emphasis on the group really pulls the rug out from under a child's value system and also undermines the parent while they're at it. They strip out the belief system and then put in a new one where the old one used to be. And what you've got to do is you've got to teach your child what private even means, because, you know, this is the Oprah age. They don't know. And what you and I would consider private, I mean, like somebody coming in and asking the price of your sofa, I mean, in our youth, that would have been a real no-no. And the children today, they'd just shrug their shoulders and not even know the difference. So you've got to really teach them what is private and what isn't. And then you've got to teach him what kinds of questions he may come up against, what he doesn't have to answer, or if he does answer them, just throw them off the track because, or say, I don't know, or something like that. Because if you don't do that and teach him what he's up against, you've lost the game already.
All right, fine. Well, let's tell our listeners how they can get to your website.
Okay, it's www.beverlye.com. It's like my first name and the first letter of my last name.
That's
Beverly
good.
With an extra E on it, .com.
All right, Beverly, E.com, and that's all one word.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll find all sorts of fascinating things that Beverly's written in. And she's on the front lines of this battle to try to get parents and citizens across America to understand what's really going on. And so, you know, of course, as you talk to parents, you know, and you tell them what's going on, what's the response you usually get?
Well, you know, it's been interesting. The parents that come to my seminars, they know something. You know, they're not complete neophytes. And most of them, but they didn't know how bad it was, and they certainly didn't know there was anything they could do. And I think what keeps some people away is the fact they feel like they can't do anything and there won't be any suggestions, but I make it real clear there will be. And I teach them, actually, how to face down a professional facilitator.
I know. You explain to them what a facilitator is.
Okay. The way some of these tests, and not just tests and surveys, but questionable curriculums and school activities get in the first place is that these parents in the school district are talked into them. They are actually giving their assent, and they never realized they were doing it.
Because basically, somebody has an agenda. They bring in a facilitator, the person who's going to sell everybody on this, and then, of course, they will try to dialogue to consensus, and they'll get in.
Right. Consensus building.
All right. And people have to understand how it's done. They get you in. They say, we want your input. Boy, what are you concerned about? And they'll write it down up on the board, and then begin to direct the whole conversation to the conclusion they've wanted to come up with all along. And of course, if you object, they'll cancel the meeting. But ordinarily, they won't take a vote at all. They'll just sort of say, this is the way this is what most people think. Don't you think? We want to know what you think. And then, of course, certainly the last thing they want is for you to not agree with them.
Well, actually, what they do is they get a handle on the factions by asking, what do you think? Write down the first things that come into your mind when I say teen pregnancy, things like that. And so while you're writing, you can't really pay attention completely to what's being said, but they're picking up every body language, every raised eyebrow. They know where you're coming from before you're halfway done with your list.
And, of course, if you don't go along with the system, they'll demonize and marginalize you and ridicule you.
That's exactly. Or they'll at least take the groups, and what they will do is pit one faction against the other until the faction that agrees with what they already wanted in the first place sounds very educated and sensible, and any other viewpoints, any other factions representing other viewpoints will be marginalized and feel like idiots. And so when they get home about an hour later, they'll say, oh, my gosh, I voted for thus and such, and I meant to vote against it. What happened? How did this happen to me? And then they'll go back and maybe think about it and realize that everybody there was had. But it doesn't hit them right away, and sometimes it doesn't hit them at all. But I teach them how to recognize what the lead-in lines are of people like this when they tell you make the list and all that. Or when they say, now we don't want our children to wind up being AIDS statistics, do we? Those words, the we in there, not you, but we, that is a giveaway. And so I teach them stuff like this so that they will recognize a facilitator and be able, then we learn to face them down and the things to say to really put them on the run.
But it sounds like these people are trained in what they're doing. They're trained to manipulate people.
They're psychologists. That's their job.
Right.
And some parents think, oh my goodness, this is going to be hard. And I tell them, well, wait a minute. If these people were trained, that means they didn't, they weren't born knowing this stuff. And so if they can be trained, you can be trained.
And they have to understand the same technique is used in planning commissions and on the water commission and the fire commission. But all of this is to manipulate the local community to go along with the dictates of the people at a much, much, much higher level.
Of whoever is paying the facilitator.
Right. And that's how the game is played.
Yep.
And it's about time that the parents understood this. Now, my personal view is your child doesn't have a chance in public school. But if there's no way you can get them out, then you have an obligation to make sure that the other parents understand what's going on and, of course, to get people into your school board. But I really think these things really now, with this new legislation, are being determined at the national level. And we can't stop it simply because our schools are required really to do this. We're going to be back here in just a minute. We'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Beverly Eichmann, and of course, we'd love to hear from you out across America. If you have any question or comment, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But we've been talking about the use of these tests in school, and really more or less personality assessment. They don't call them academic achievement tests. What do they call these tests? Or do they
call them assessments. So that if the fire hits the fan and somebody takes them to court or the press comes in, they can say, well, this isn't a test, it's an assessment. And there's an important difference. If you're assessing someone, you're not testing him, right? And so the academic part of it is usually very small. Now, I have seen one or two, like the Metropolitan Achievement Test. They actually have the gall to call it an achievement test, and it was heavily, heavily psychological profile, and that could have been, the parents could have called them on it as fraud if the parents ever saw it. But what the state legislators have been talked into is exempting all of these assessments from the Freedom of Information Act, including old ones, so that nobody gets to see them. And, I mean, I know how to get to see them, or I couldn't have written the book, but it was not easy, I can tell you. You really have to know how to do it, and an individual parent can get into trouble. I mean, once you're writing a lot of books and, you know, you achieve a certain amount of renown, obviously they don't want to go after you because they don't want more people to make a martyr out of you. But until that happens, the parent's in big trouble.
No, my understanding is that they've actually passed a federal law now on the new federal legislation, making it a federal crime to actually circulate one of these tests. Have you heard about that?
Yeah, and you know, I haven't got the number in front of me of the law, but yes, they have done that. And
so
the idea is that you will have compromised the validity of tests if anybody sees it. And my response to that is, if I can't see it, my kid doesn't take it.
Right. Of course, the thing is that the parent really doesn't know unless they've got one of these forms in there ahead of time. Now, are these forms up on your webpage where people can
put them down? It's a letter is what it is, and it's called the, I'm not looking at it right this second, but it's the Parent Informed Consent Notice.
And, of course, the thing is you should have another one as far as the sex education and the homosexual education and the perversion education, and you should let your school know that you don't want this comprehensive sex education aimed at destroying modesty. Is that there too?
No, it's in the same letter.
Right.
I managed to roll it all into one.
Good. Well, that's so important because basically they have an intention. They want to destroy the modesty and the embarrassment that goes with sex. That's why they want to have all sex discussions in mixed classes so that the children overcome their embarrassment. And once you remove the embarrassment, and modesty, and you've attacked the very soul of that child. And that's what they want. They know exactly what they're doing. They just want the parents to know what they're doing.
That's right. It's very insidious. I mean, these children who think they're gay and this and that, half of them aren't. I mean, most of them aren't. They simply have gotten the idea from the school that they're supposed to be, or that they might be, or they've had crazy ideas planted in their vulnerable little heads. But by the time they've gotten involved in that kind of a lifestyle, then they can't look at anything normally. So you really have ruined a life. I mean, this is abuse. This is abuse big time of a child. And, I mean, it's natural to have a certain amount of modesty and so forth. Sex is not a spectator sport. And that's the way it's being really presented to the child, as though it were a sport. And it's not. And this has hurt family, and of course they want to hurt families. They don't want families that involve with their children's education or moral upbringing. They find families to be nuisances. So that's just one more way to accomplish that. And it's really very sad because the special interests have gotten such a hold on the education system, and most of them are in the mental health industry. That is a huge industry now. It's a cottage industry. And all these sex educators affiliate, basically, or see themselves as part of the mental health movement. So all this mental health industry stuff has hijacked the education system. And even if our president is honestly trying to do the best he can and really believes in what he's doing, for example, the testing of children, I mean, most people say, yeah, kids ought to be tested. He hasn't looked at the tests.
No, maybe he has.
Let somebody else do it.
So whoever looked at that test knows that this has very little to do with academics.
That's right.
It has to do with attitudes, values, and beliefs. And, of course, if you're pushing a program and you don't know what's in that program, why, you are still responsible for that program.
That's right.
And, of course, this is a terrible, terrible thing. And for our listeners out there, we have a wonderful little book called Fed Ed.
Oh,
do you know that book by
Professor Quinn? They asked for a review from me, and I'm getting around to it.
All right, fine. Well, actually, of course, the foreword is written by Phyllis Schlafly, who I have a great deal of respect for. And she said, this is one of the most important books of our time. And so I said, sure, you know, that's such a nice thing to say. You know, you always will say that when you're reviewing a book, so people will think it's really a good book. And after reading the book, I had to agree. It's a short, very small little book. But what he says, really having reviewed all of these textbooks and the government laws, government programs, is that there is an organized, coordinated effort to destroy, in my estimation, the very heart and soul of our children, and by doing that, to change our society forever. And, of course, people say, well, that's, you know, America's never going to change. Well, America's already changed a lot. And it's about time people realize that education is the tool. And you go back and read what Karl Marx wrote in 1848, the Communist Manifesto, and he said, you know, the point number 10 of the 10 points was free public education for every child. Why? Because that was how they were going to get control of our children, and that's what they're doing. And, of course, it all has to do with destroying the individual and, of course, making them part of the collective or the commune, as it were.
So that's right.
Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Our guest this evening, Beverly Ekman. And really, this is such an important issue. But even more than that, they're collecting dossiers on our children. Now, of course, we know the DARPA movement collecting dossiers on adults. Now, why do they want dossiers on everybody? Oh, we're fighting terrorism. Well, ladies and gentlemen, do you really think we're fighting terrorism in the schools collecting these dossiers? And if you believe that, then you probably believe that they want to, of course, find the buying habits of all the 85-year-old ladies. That's part of the fight on terrorism as well. And until you've actually seen one of your files, which I had the opportunity to see my own FBI file, I got it, and page after page after page after page blacked out in the name of national security. And,
yep.
You know, what was even more interesting was that they had clippings from talks I'd given back in 1964.
Oh,
in other words, they were going into the newspapers and clipping anything having to do with everybody.
And now it's computerized,
right, of course,
for posterity.
Yeah. And so they don't have to give you those files. It's all
That's exactly right.
And ladies and gentlemen, this is the sort of thing that's going on. This is long-range planning to change America from what it was and to, I personally believe, what George Orwell and Aldous Huxley both feared. Well, you know, of course, as parents become more and more concerned, is this going to really change anything? Because all the rest of the children are going to be there, and they're going to have the dossiers on them. If even we can keep our own children out of the system, what about the other children? What about the harm that they're doing, you know, in with this organized educational effort to change their attitude towards America? They're not teaching the tradition America, the concepts of freedom under God. They're teaching a collectivist concept of the importance of the state and how really everybody should be taken care of by the state, how it's the function of government to provide for people from the cradle to the grave, and removing individual responsibility and replacing with this collectivist responsibility concept.
Well, you know, I have a fax, or I got a fax. In fact, I reprinted it on page 62 of my book. It was from a teacher in North Carolina that went to, you have to go to a certain number of in-service workshops when you're a teacher. And this was what she got. It was a list of the preferred values that teachers and educators are supposed to be instilling in their children. And this was from North Carolina, which I would not believed a few years ago. Here's the list. 7 things. Consensus is more important than principle. Amenability is more valuable than hard knowledge. Nothing is permanent except change. The collective is more important than the individual. There are no perpetrators, only victims. Ethics are situational. There are no moral absolutes. And finally, There is no right or wrong, only conditioned responses.
Now, of course, I'm sure she was horrified because she recognized that. The trouble is,
yep.
There are probably a lot of other people that weren't horrified. That would be the most horrifying thing. People would think that this was perfectly all right, that this would be the function of education. And, of course, you know, once you remove an awareness of God, why, then, of course, there are no absolutes. You know, who's to say what's right, what's wrong? After all, isn't murder sometimes acceptable in wartime? Isn't perhaps a killing of somebody in chronic horrible pain who are going to have a chronic horrible death? Isn't that perhaps justified? And of course, you know, you can rationalize anything, if you're clever at creating phrases. They used to call it sophistry in the time of ancient Greece, and of course, what eventually brought that down. But they use that in our schools today to destroy the sense of values that parents are trying to inculcate into children.
Well, the problem, too, is they're doing all these things at a very inappropriate age. I mean, they're not studying the timeless tomes that used to be written. They're not studying anything that is timeless before they get into subjects like that. I mean, you start talking about the person who has a horrible disease and he's going to die and there's no question about it and he's in awful pain. Well, the time to discuss that isn't in third grade. You know? There's a lot of things that come before that kind of discussion. You have to have a context before you can even discuss the rightness or wrongness, and of course the religion is part of that. Without any context, just bringing it in out of the blue, that doesn't do anybody any good, and that doesn't do the child any good. And that's the kind of activities they've got. You know, they've got lifeboat exercises and all, you know, who would you save out of all these different types of people.
I mean, who would you throw out of the lifeboat? Is it, that's a values clarification.
Exactly. And so they're bringing up these kinds of topics at age-inappropriate times. They sweep away the value system that the parent has instilled and that the church has instilled, if any, and don't give the child any time to establish any kind of value system or to have any kind of context, historical or otherwise. They don't teach them about any of the religions at all. I mean, they just bring these things in out of the blue. So it's no wonder that the children then are very confused. And I was really interested in the last couple of years, last 5 years, college university professors are saying that all of a sudden they can't get their students to agree that the torture that was done during the Holocaust was wrong. And they were very surprised by that, because they always got at least that much out of, you know, these kids before, during the 60s and the 70s, and all of a sudden the children are saying such, or the students are saying such things as, well, maybe those actions fulfilled some kind of need.
Yeah.
You know. And they're completely stymied, that they're not at least getting a rightness or wrongness out of torture, you know?
Well, but
that's what happens when you do these kinds of things over a period of years.
But what they're doing, Billy, is they're playing mind games with our children.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, what they're doing is conditioning them to a false set of beliefs. And this DARE program they have in the, and they bring the police officer, and then, this is going to get kids off of drugs. We've got to get kids off of drugs. Well, if it's supposed to get kids off of drugs, it's doing a terrible job. If it's supposed to indoctrinate children and they make the choices as to what's right and wrong, it's doing a great job. And what 13 or 14-year-old child can make an adult decision? And we ought to be telling them, you do not use drugs. No, we don't tell them that. You make the decision. We want to teach you to make decisions. In fact, that whole concept was being encouraged by the tobacco companies. And they were really pushing at this because they knew that if kids were going to make a decision, they'd make the wrong decision.
Of course.
And, of course, that's what we send them to school for, or as we raise them to make the right decision. As my old minister used to say, you know, you never had to teach a child to be bad. You had to teach them to be good, and we're not teaching them to be good in school. That's the tragedy.
And
we're not teaching them the consequences. And, of course, when I got a 16-year-old girl, a 15-year-old girl is pregnant, it's too late to say, gee, well, maybe we should have told her that this was inappropriate activity.
Yeah, that's it exactly. And, you know, it's true, too, that the parent used to be backed up by the school. I mean, that was assumed to be part of the school's function, was to back up the traditional morals that were taught by the parent or instilled by the parent, even if the parent wasn't perfect. No parent's perfect, for heaven's sakes. Everybody errs. But it wasn't a matter of policy to be as bad as you could be. And now the school does not back up the parent. It's always a confrontational mode under the pretense of empowering the parent or a partnership or some craziness. But you're only a partner as long as you agree with what the school says, as long as you serve the cookies and the punch and agree with what the consensus is. The minute you start questioning anything, you're gone. I mean, they're not paying any more attention.
Have you run into this situation? They want you to sign a contract, a parent contract.
I've heard of it. I haven't myself.
Somebody called me the other day and told me that, they were asked to sign a contract with the school, you know, about being a good parent and supposedly you're supposed
report
to
report card.
Something like that. But you were supposed to spend so much time helping the child study and this and that, the other thing. You agreed, and, of course, I said, you never sign anything with the school about your children. You know, you get them to sign something about your children, but don't you ever do it, because you sign that, and then they can say, well, now you have not spent as much time as you should have, and therefore the reason your child is failing, it's your fault, and, of course, we're going to take the kids away from you. You're not living up to your agreement. And there really are people out there. In fact, we have this whole child abuse industry. People don't understand why they're taking so many children out of the homes, but it's because they get up to $25,000 in money to spend and funding for every child they can take out of a home. But that's a completely different subject. And yet it sort of gets into this whole thing that the children really don't belong to the families. And, of course, the schools are not there to serve the parent. They're there to serve the state. And
well, see, if they get the kids, if they get adults to buy into the idea that sex is sport, then their children, well, they're just the product of their sport. And so they belong to the state, not really to them. And the presumption is that parents aren't raising their kids. They're just holding them up like trophies and proving that they're sexually attractive or something. The parent, that is. They're proving to each other it's kind of like a one-upsmanship type thing. And then they throw the kid in daycare, don't look at him again until he's 18. This is the assumption that the state is making about a majority of parents. Some parents do that? Well, yes, and the more this kind of education goes forth, the more parents will do it. But that is not the majority yet, not even close. And so they're making an assumption. They're really insulting the majority of parents who take their responsibilities seriously. And the more they insult them, the more parents are finally going to get tired of fighting, and that's already happening. You know, they take sex teaching away from them, they take this away from them, that away from them. They get the kids so involved in mandatory extracurricular activities that the parent hardly ever sees the child. And then finally the parents give up. They say, you want my kid? Fine. I've had enough. And then you get incidents like Columbine. Because the parents really have done what the school has told them to, stay out of it.
Well, of course, this was a philosophy that was espoused 2,350 years ago in Plato's Republic, where, of course, and really, to understand what's going on today, you really have to go back and read what Plato wrote, that we were to have a ruling elite. We were to have a police force, a military class that would oppress the people. And then, of course, we would have really the breakup of marriages. There would be no true marriage. The women were to belong to all men, and the children were to belong to the state. This was a utopian society that Plato dreamed of. And that, of course, is what is really being patterned in many ways today. And these people who espouse these concepts of socialism, they, of course, are the elite, and they understand that our traditional concept of freedom under God and limited government is the antithesis of the socialist or Marxist state, which everybody says is going to, of course, redistribute the wealth. but it's not the wealth of the very, very wealthy. It's the wealth of the common man.
Right.
And every time we pass a law that's going to keep the very, very wealthy from not paying taxes, we find out that more of the wealthy are not paying taxes. And if anybody thinks that's happening by accident, they are incredibly, incredibly gullible. Anyway, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Our guest is Beverly Eckman. And, of course, we're talking about her book, The Cloning of the American Mind. It's must reading for anybody who wants to know what's going on, and really beautifully documented, a sort of book you just can't read without becoming emotionally involved to realize that they've targeted the mind and the heart and the soul of our children. So, Beverly, of course, what would you tell a parent today if they called you and said, Beverly, what can I do? I'm concerned about what's going on in my child's school.
Well, first of all, I would tell them, if possible, get them out of the public school and, understand exactly who the movers and shakers are that are contributing to this mess. And that's, of course, what I try to write about. Keep them away from the psychologists and the mental health industry. And, you know, if you can homeschool them, fine. I realize not everybody's cut out for it. If you can private school them, that's great, too. But, you know, don't let the private school be a panacea either, because you've got to interview them just as much as they're interviewing you, or you're going to get back just what you got in the public school and you're going to pay more for it. So you got to be really careful about that. But I would also say to download that letter from my website and, fill it out appropriately. You know, you put the name of the superintendent and the principal. I leave blanks for these things. And get parents, like-minded parents together that agree with each other. And, you know, you be the boss, basically. And make it known and make it understood to the principal and your superintendent that's the way it's going to be. There are still recourses open to us. There are still legal avenues open to us. But the window isn't going to stay open for much longer.
I agree with you. And, of course, you're here in California. We have Brad Dacus, the Pacific Justice Institute, who will help you bring a suit against the law, the local school district. And you say, oh, gee, I want to do that. It's going to cost them money. Well, that's the only way you're going to get any attention out of these people. I mean, some of them are good people in the school board. Some of them know exactly what they're doing. And, of course, you have to guard your children. I mean, God gave the children to the parents, not to the state, not to the school board, and certainly not to the teachers. So there are a lot of good teachers in the system, and I'm sure you've run into them as well, Beverly. I'm totally frustrated by what's going on. They recognize it, but when you're a teacher, you really can't fight the system, can you?
Well, you know, I was a teacher for 9 years out there in your old stomping ground. I live close to it anyway. I was in Orange County, so you're quite a bit north of me, but still I taught in Westminster School District for 9 years. And, well, 7 years there and two years in Texas. But I just changed careers. I mean, I you're right. There was nothing I could do very much to change things. I could do more than the teachers can today. I created my own curriculums. I looked at some of these books and said, no way. And fortunately, I had a principal that did sort of back me up on it. Let's put it this way. He didn't not back me up. So, there was more I could do then than now. But now that these very invasive questionnaires have come out and that teachers are basically being asked to teach in accordance with the questionnaires, so that these kids are giving politically correct answers all the time and a very, very minute amount of actual substantive academic material, the whole game has changed.
Yeah.
And it has become a dangerous game.
And, of course, really, I think it's changed most dramatically with the new administration. I think this new Kennedy-Bush bill that was passed, Ted Kennedy's bill, which George Bush put his name on, is one of the most draconian bills I've ever seen. And certainly, as Alan Quist has pointed out in his book, Fed Ed. That's Fed Ed.
Yeah.
Why, if you read that, you realize what has happened. And this is really aimed at destroying any belief in America as an individual society.
They've listened to the wrong people, and I don't know how much President Bush really believes himself that, you know, the things in there, I mean, it's just another version of Goals 2000.
Right.
They've just slapped a new label on it, and he slapped a new label on the last guy's, you know, thing. So it keeps morphing into a federal program that has nothing to do with you know, the state and local, and certainly not with a parent. And whatever they want to say about it, they are usurping the parents' rights, and they are not teaching, you know, the tests do not test academic material. And until the president looks at those tests himself instead of asking somebody else to do it, like the Carnegie Foundation for the Advancement of Teaching or something, that created half the mess themselves because their spinoff is the Educational Testing Service. So until he stops doing that and looks at these test questions himself and looks at the computers that they're going into and what they're cross-matching this stuff with, nothing is going to change.
All right. Well, I want to thank you so very much for being with us. Again, our guest is Beverly Ekman. Her website is www.beverlye.com. And, of course, if you'd like to get her to come and talk in your area, she's a magnificent talker. She'll have an impact. And if you possibly can get it together, basically, how do you arrange for to come into an area?
They contact me by email, and we just, you know, set it up. I usually do an overview speech so that the people who are new know what they're getting into, and then we do a regular workshop aimed at thwarting professional facilitators who are, you know, taking the school systems in a completely, backward direction, and putting some of these terrible programs in. And I teach parents really to face off with them in such a way that other people will go along with them. They're not to be just hostile or naysayers. They're actually to give the message to other people who are in the room kind of surreptitiously and get other people to realize what they're looking at so that they can gain more people that have their eyes open. And you can do it. It does work. I've seen it work. I've gotten some wonderful feedback from it. And so what they do is they just email me through my website. I have a little email button, and we set it up. And, you know, usually I have a fee and a plane fare and all that stuff, but I try not to make it so expensive that people can't afford me to come out there because they need this material. And they need this stuff, and I know that a lot of these groups are very small.
Oh, well, thank you so very much for Beverly, and we look forward to having you on our other programs in the near future. Bye-bye, and God bless you.
God bless. Oh,
okay, fine. Well, that was Beverly Ekman, and I hope you enjoyed having her with us. And it's always a pleasure to have Beverly. This is the time, of course, when we have to say goodnight to our listeners up in the Great Northwest. And, of course, we ask you to pray for America, because behind all of this effort to destroy the faith of our children are the dark spiritual forces that have always wanted to destroy Christianity, Judaism. And, of course, we ask you to pray for America, because America was founded as a Christian country, contrary to everything you've ever read. But, of course, you go back and you read the original documents, you'll find that this was the case. And we ask you to pray for our leaders and certainly for revival, because if America doesn't turn back to God, God will turn against America forever. But lastly, we ask you to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until tomorrow, good night. May the Lord be with you. evening, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls. We have this in studio tonight, sitting across from me, smiling, Jeannie Soderman. And Jeannie, of course, is an environmentalist. She was an environmentalist all of her life. And she made the mistake of tuning into the wrong radio program one time. And she heard somebody talking about how the environmental system was being used to actually do exactly the opposite from what environmentalists wanted. And she began to read and study because she couldn't believe that. And eventually she came to the conclusion that there is a movement within environmentalism that isn't interested in the environment, but is simply using it to advance a political agenda. And that's a rather frightening concept, and yet, of course, it's really very accurate. Well, Jeannie has become an expert on certainly Agenda 21, sustainable development. She was back at the Millennium Conference in the year 2000 there, and certainly attended the State of the World Forum Millennium Conference. She goes to conferences all over the West Coast and really all over the country, getting together information. And, of course, we love to have her on here to share that with you, because the average individual really doesn't understand when they talk about, we want to save the redwoods. Really what they want to do, of course, is prevent lumbering, prevent getting the diseased wood out of the woods, to leave them like timber so they'll burn. They talk about, oh, we're so concerned about the animals. They're not concerned about their animals that are burned up in the fire. In fact, there was a wonderful article in Insight magazine I quoted in one of my articles on the electricity crisis, where the head of Southern California Edison was meeting with the head of the Sierra Club and saying, look, how can we work together? We all want to preserve the environment. And finally, the head of the Sierra Club looked at him and said, look, you might as well understand we're not interested in saving the environment. We're carrying out a political agenda similar to that of the limits of growth concept at the Club of Rome. And of course, the limits of growth basically is a political concept using sustainable development that's running out of natural resources, really to justify an all-powerful authoritarian state. And that's what the Club of Rome really wants. That's what the ruling elite wants. And that, of course, is what is really going on today. As we use the environment to take away people's property, as we use the threat to the environment as a vehicle of expanding the power over the state, over the lives of every single individual. And with that, go ahead, Jeannie. Tell me what you're going to talk about tonight.
Well, first of all, Dr. Stan, do we need a disclaimer this evening?
Well, of course, we always need a disclaimer. What are we going to disclaim?
Well, whenever I get on, you say, uh-oh, Jeannie's on. We better have a disclaimer here. But all the information that I'm giving this evening is information that are in the books, that's in the government documents, in the UN documents. So everything that I'm saying this evening is documented. So it's public information. I sometimes wonder, I came across this word, smart. Everything is smart now, Dr. Stan.
Smart growth, you mean?
Yeah, smart growth, smart communities. And this evening, I have a bottle of water. Can you believe it's called smart water?
Well, who'd ever want dumb communities, dumb water, or dumb growth, you know? But, of course, what they're doing is they're using that word to give you the idea smart is good, but smart could really be absolutely dumb, and some of what we're doing with city planning really is terribly, terribly foolish. Because, of course, centralized planning doesn't work. I mean, it may put up a beautiful building for a time, but eventually you end up like they have in Russia today, where you have centralized planning, you've got all these buildings, and of course they're falling apart after a few years.
Well, the word smart comes up, and they never say stupid growth, But I did find a book when I was in Kauai a couple weeks ago, and it was entitled Tending the Garden Island. Of course, Kauai is the Garden Island of the Hawaiian Islands, and it says this is towards a new Kauaian governance. It was written by a gentleman from Harvard University, and he co-partnered with a Kauaian lady. And it does say, stupid growth, you want smart growth. It does go into Agenda 21, which we've talked about, and that is the blueprint to bring us into sustainable communities and corral the people in these small communities so we will be controlled. Looking at SMART, I find Pacific Bell has SMART Yellow Pages. Kellogg's cereal has SMART Start. It's a SMART Start for eating cereal in the morning. You've got even Hanes Underpants for Women, SMART Style. Coupons that come in with your newspaper, SMART Source. And I know a lot of we women, we take the coupons and we cut it out and we redeem them at the grocery store. Then we have vitamins, SMART Vitamins, popcorn, SMART Food popcorn. And they even have a SMART Strip. And this is the strip that the emergency workers use and the first responders. It detects nerve agents, cyanide, and chemicals. Then we have SMART Communities Network on the internet. We even have smartcop.com. And I was thinking, well, what makes a smart cop? And actually, it's software for the police and the first responders. If you have a computer in your car, then that is the software program for the policeman. Even in the Santa Cruz Sentinel, you have street smarts, tips on driving safely. And in the internet, if you see the pop-up ads, they have mortgages, get smart, and advertising, get smart. So everything is smart now. But there's always two meanings to words that they put out. And smart could mean you're very intelligent, you're very witty, or it could mean it's going to sting, it's going to smart and hurt you. So here again, if you, through your days of looking through the magazines or the newspapers, you come across smart. Remember, that's the red flag for Local Agenda 21 and how they're really changing the language and doing it so we look at SMART and say, well, I'm going to do that because I want to be SMART. So everything is geared for indoctrinating us into this one-world government.
Are you suggesting that they're using words to manipulate our response and our attitude?
Oh, definitely. Words, words, words.
They know exactly what they're doing, Jeannie. In fact, they are really so clever. I won't use the word smart. But they actually have think tanks where they actually think. And, of course, we see this in the ads. When somebody's going to put out $250,000 for a one-minute ad on the Super Bowl, don't think that that isn't all. Every aspect of that is thought through very carefully. They know exactly how to impact on your mind. And, of course, they use sex, smart sex. But, the thing is that words can be used to cover the true purpose. And when they talk about smart growth, what they're really talking about is controlled growth, controlled by the elite. Who know what's best for you. Now, of course, a smart growth would not affect, if you had a developer who was favored by the power elite, they would be allowed to develop. But, of course, if you were not part of the in-group, you would not be allowed to. And, this is true, whatever you give power, certainly you don't find members of the group that runs Santa Cruz, the inner core, the people who have actually put their people in power, they don't have trouble getting their permits. They're not checked out by the County Planning Commission. It's us common folks.
Well, that's right. It's us common folks. We have to fight for what we have and what we've worked for. Usually, Dr. Stan, I talk about sustainable development and the environmental portion of that. I'd like to talk this evening about the business part of sustainable development. And I got a little bit curious in Santa Cruz County, California, when I saw this new group form about 1996, and it was called the Santa Cruz County Business Council. And to be a member of the council, it was pretty heavy monies. For just being a member, it was $1,000. For being on the executive board, it was about $2,500. And I was thinking, well, what average business, if you're just starting a business, that's a lot of money. So I kind of followed that Santa Cruz County Business Council, because I was reading that they mentioned they were not formed or organized to replace the Chamber of Commerce, but they were here to kind of look at the issues of the county and kind of oversee what was happening. And I thought, why do we need another business council? But now, as I have researched it, the Santa Cruz County Business Council oversees especially organizations such as the Chamber of Commerce and United Way and the Workforce Investment Force. And of course, the Workforce Investment Organization, they are the ones that will have a list of what jobs are needed in Santa Cruz County. They look at the companies here in Santa Cruz County and what needs to be done to run those companies. And of course, they give a list to the schools, so the schools will educate for these particular jobs.
Well, not really do we have that many jobs here. We have a little group out there in Scotts Valley. We have the little Silicon Valley, and we have several nice industries out there. But we've lost things like Lipton's, haven't we? As I believe, pulled out, and Wrigley's, and so many of these things that have been here for many years, they've just sort of picked up and moved out, and others have been discouraged from coming in. I know we had a big laundry here in town, and they just picked up and moved out. They were giving such a bad time when it came to trying to expand their facility, and they just picked up and said, sayonara. So we seem to be having primarily electronic dot-com type of industries, but even they are cutting back somewhat. I see where Borland is actually going to be moving over to its headquarters over across the way, over in the Silicon Valley. And of course, hopefully they're going to keep the majority of their staff here. But if their headquarters is over there, can the rest of Borland be far behind moving across the hill?
Well, we certainly are moving a lot of companies and people's jobs out of Santa Cruz County. There's basically here, we have a big agricultural community. We still have biotechnology companies, and you've got your medical clinics, your health services, all your stores, your retail.
But that's all services. I mean,
you're
talking about production. I mean, you've got to have a certain amount of production. At least you'd like to have a certain amount of production over and above your service, because how many people can you have serving one another if you don't have any industrial base?
Right, and that's what we lack in Santa Cruz County is production. And listening to Tom DeWeese at his seminar, he had mentioned within the last year the production, all the production in the United States had gone down 20%.
20% in just a year?
Just a year,
The average individual doesn't understand that this is long-range planning. Part of this whole program of moving our major industries overseas, and of course with the absence of tariffs, we really can't compete. Our laborers can't compete possibly with the Chinese laborers. Here in America, you'd make, as a good laborer, probably $60,000-$70,000 a year. And over there, of course, they pay people a couple of dollars a day to work. And the Chinese are good workers. They're industrious workers. They have good, product control. Quality control, and a lot of the goods that are coming in from China now are good quality. In fact, even Taiwan and Korea are beginning to ship material into China to get it produced there, putting their own people out of work because they can get quality products at a cheaper price. But what we have done basically is to do what Napoleon warned against so many years ago, and he said, "Let China sleep, for when China awakens, the world will tremble." And we are doing everything we can to build up China and, of course, in the process to destroy the industrial base of America. And people say, why would anybody want to do that? Well, the reason we want to do it is because our leaders are dedicated to this socialist concept, from each according to their ability, to each according to their need, and driving down the living standards of the American people. And, of course, when this happens, why are we going to blame it on that on the wicked Saddam Hussein?
Well, last year, trade deficit, the United States had a trade deficit of $100 billion with China, and that's just one year.
And, of course, pretty close to about half a trillion dollars for the whole year from, what is it, at least well over $400 billion, with the rest of the world.
Right. So looking at the local business and what they're trying to accomplish, I was looking at the Chamber of Commerce's too, and of course they're just a group that they bring in all the businesses, and they try to help the businesses to be successful. But I was curious about the Chamber of Commerce because there was one man that came in from Albuquerque, New Mexico, and he is Mike Schmidt, and I did put him on the Google, and I did talk to people in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And this particular person co-founded and was president of Shared Vision Incorporated. Shared Vision is the same plan as Local Agenda 21. And so this man came from Albuquerque, New Mexico, and he was the CEO of the Chamber of Commerce there, came into Santa Cruz County and proceeded to get all the good jobs, such as the CEO of the Chamber of Commerce, very well in with the Santa Cruz County Business Council, and also on the board of directors of the Workforce Investment Organization. And so looking at, and also on United Way. United Way does get a lot of monies, especially from Packard Foundation. They received $435,000 from Packard Foundation last year.
Now, this is just a local United Way?
Yes, okay, correct, fine. Yeah.
Now, of course, then that is given, money is given out to charitable organizations. But they're not giving any to the Scouts, are they? They give it to the Scouts?
They still do.
Okay, good. I'm glad for that.
But what's happening, and there's a county in Oregon that has just arbitrarily made a ruling that by the year 2004, the United Way could not give any money to the Boy Scouts, mainly because of their philosophy.
Mm-hmm. That's because they believe in God, and of course they have certain standards. But of course, they have to understand that this is all political to try to force the Scouts to give up their concepts of being, morally straight.
Mm-hmm. So what we're seeing is it's the local counties and the local city councils that are creating the initiatives to bring us into this one world government.
Okay, and fine. Of course, this whole thing of Sustainable Development Agenda 21 is the major purpose behind all of this, isn't it, Jeannie?
Yes.
As we begin to modify our local laws in concert with the state and national and then the international laws. And this is exactly what Maurice Strong talks about in his latest book, how they were going to use everything at the local level. I couldn't figure out what he was talking about. I mean, I would think they would want it centralized. Well, what they really do is have it centralized, but they sell it to us as local control, exactly as the president says, what I want in the schools is local control, return the education to the parent and to the local school board. But, of course, we'll test to make sure you're testing or you're training the children as we want them trained. So they say one thing, they have another agenda. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And going back to the CEOs of the Chamber of Commerce, this particular one that came from Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Well, we won't mention necessarily his name, but he is a very prominent person in town here, I assume, from
He went to Tracy.
Well, now, we went to Tracy.
Now, Dr. Stan, this is all documented. This is public. He went to Tracy to become the CEO of the Chamber of Commerce in Tracy, California. And looking through the website, when he was CEO of the Santa Cruz Area Chamber of Commerce, he said, "I was able to have the board of directors adopt as one of their key core values as a chamber the goal of operating businesses in a sustainable manner." These are carpetbaggers coming in, Dr. Stan.
They really are?
Yes, they are. And they're coordinating all the businesses and kind of pushing them gently into being sustainable. Well, as we know, sustainable businesses, they are only going to be successful with the ones that have a lot of money that will go into all these regulations that they put on them.
I think the word sustainable should be substituted by socialism. If we use the word socialism for sustainable, then you'll understand what they're talking about.
Well, yeah, and actually it's corporate socialism.
Corporate socialism,
yeah.
Right.
And in the end, it's where the corporations will rule the world. And this is hard for me as being an environmentalist with the World Wildlife Fund, the Greenpeace, and Nature Conservancy, is because the people that belong to these groups, the elitists and the multinational corporations, they use our emotions for the love of the land and the animals and the plants. And they use we, the people in the environmental groups, as foot soldiers for the elitists in the multinational corporations. So listening to you, Dr. Stan, on the air the first day, I thought, well, there's a kernel of truth, so that's when I started researching. And I finally found out I was being used. I was being lied to. And no one likes to be lied to. That's where the search for truth is so important, and to look up the documents and see what is really happening. The business in Santa Cruz County now is gradually, they're consolidating the businesses, and they're pushing them gently into sustainable businesses or socialist businesses. They have code words like closed loop production. In other words, they have cluster units. And there's people here that are very big in Santa Cruz County, that the chair of the cluster board and the vice chair of the cluster board. The cluster is actually where businesses are grouped together. So let's just say one business uses a product, and then he has an end waste product. And then the other business that's close to that business can use the waste product and create and produce another product. Now, a lot of this is good. A lot of this is great. It sounds great. We can recycle, and I'm all for that. But the end result is not what they say. We're going to have a utopian world where we will end up as slaves working for the multinational corporations. Right now, when you go out, I just put my trash out tonight. Well, you have to separate the paper, the plastic bottles, the glass bottles. And so I'm separating that for the multinational corporation that's going to pick it up tomorrow morning. I'm actually working for them already. That doesn't please me, Dr. Stan.
Well, but they know exactly what they're doing. They get everybody to go along, and this is the great tragedy. We saw this last week when, you know, after raising the level of terror from yellow to orange, they immediately said, and now we want you, of course, to get the duct tape and the plastic so you can seal your rooms. Everybody runs out to get the duct tape and plastic, and then they say, oh, well, we really didn't want you to do that. We didn't want you to be frightened. We just wanted you to be prepared. And, of course, they know how exactly how to manipulate the public. And they're manipulating, they're playing games with their minds, and especially with all these terror alerts, because they know when people live in fear, they, of course, cease to be able to think clearly. And that's what they're going to be doing. I think that, as the President of Canada said a couple of days after the 9/11 attack, this war will never end. What does he mean? We will always be living in fear. You'll never live as free people again. And, of course, we are going to use this as a vehicle of creating this wonderful new world order. In fact, even talk about this wonderful resolution of the United Nations the previous day for the new world order. And so this is what it's all about. Mm-hmm. And, of course, as long as they can manipulate our emotions, we won't be able to oppose this move towards globalism.
Well, that's one way of controlling us, is through fear. And that's where it goes into pantheism, too, is you have the spirits of the forest and the river. And if you violate them, they will come down on you. So it's the fear also in spirituality that they'll be controlling us. And that's, if the people could understand that if there's no fear, then they can't control us. So knowing the blueprint of what's coming up, then there's no fear, because we can follow the blueprint.
Sure.
And understand.
We know exactly what they're doing and how they're using the people and using the threat of terrorism and using all of these things to control us.
Now, I just went to a meeting. It was a sustainability meeting up in San Francisco, and it was regarding business. And first they had, in all these seminars, they have this segment on the population. And they have a screen up there where, you've seen it, Dr. Stan, is it gets more population, there's white dots that start covering the earth, and then there's more white dots. But behind there, I heard like a little sound. I thought, well, what is that sound? And it was very slow, like thump, thump. And then it got quicker and quicker as more dots came on the screen. And actually what they were simulating was the heartbeat. And there was one lady beside me saying, oh, my Lord, she says, look at all the people. What are we going to do? And she actually, her heartbeat was going with the dots that were going on the screen. And I thought it was an amazing thing how they did that. But if you understand how they're manipulating us through these visual effects and the audio effects, then that is so important. At the sustainable meeting, there was one man that I listened to very intently. And he said business was going to be the 800-pound gorilla. He said if we could not get business to go along with being sustainable, then we could not implement sustainability throughout the world, or we could not implement Agenda 21. And he talked about Chapter 30 of the International Agenda 21 document. And this has to do with businesses, how they are to be successful and what they need to do. And there's a book out that's called Walking the Talk, The Business Case for Sustainable Development. This I ordered from England. And all the names that are pushing this are the huge multinational corporations. I see no small businesses in there. But they are the ones, the huge multinational corporations that signed on in 1992 at the Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro, because they didn't want to get left behind.
And, of course, this is this whole idea that the corporations will be working in concert with government, public-private partnerships to create this corporate fascist state, exactly as they had in Mussolini's Italy, where the corporations work with the government, and the government then works to the benefit of the corporations, but not to the individual. And this is really what we're seeing in America today. The corporations moving into China with the full economic support and of our own country. But, of course, the loyalty of the corporation is not to America, but this internationalist dream. And that, of course, is what people don't understand. And as their living levels go down, why they're not going to understand why they've lost their freedom, their homes, their jobs, and their security. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, of course, is Jeannie Soderman, and she's talking about this conference, this sustainable business conference that she attended. Now, if you're out there in the listening audience and you agree or you disagree, give us a call, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. The thing is that there is a plan. They don't want the public to learn the plan. They don't really want them to understand what's going on until, of course, it's too late to turn anything around. If they told the American people that the purpose behind NAFTA and World Trade Organization was to actually decrease American production to transfer our industry overseas, the American people would never go for it. If they told the people of the state of California that deregulation of electricity was designed to raise the price of electricity, they wouldn't go along with that. If they told them the whole idea of limiting the availability of water was really so that they could limit our use of water, the reason they're not trying to solve the problem, just actually perpetuating the problem, the people would be outraged. But you see, the people have no idea that they're constantly being manipulated by the media, by, of course, these non-governmental organizations, by the environmental movement, all having to do with the sustainable world. Jeannie, go ahead and pick that up.
Well, after going to this sustainable committee meeting in San Francisco, I received a follow-up brochure, and this is, to me, amazing. It was just saying, well, we have another two-day conference on the environment and the social and economic aspects of sustainable development. And I like to read just two sentences, because this is amazing on this brochure regarding the businesses coming together. It says, quote, "The importance of demonstrating corporate responsibility is no longer a subject for debate. It is quite simply a prerequisite for survival. Companies, public, agencies, and others that work to meet these challenges can derive benefits for all of their stakeholders, and those that fail to do so may suffer serious adverse short and long-term consequences."
What are they saying?
Well, that looks to me like a real threat. If you don't come along and be a sustainable business and go by the rules that we're making, you're not going to be in business for very long.
Well, that could very well be. That's the way it sounds to me. It sounds like a veiled threat, doesn't it?
Well, they're getting very arrogant now, and so they're just saying, you better get on the bandwagon or you're not going to be in business much longer.
Okay, well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Give us a call if you agree or you're concerned about these things that are going on. These meetings are being held regularly. You're not being covered here in your local newspaper. The World Economic Forum held a couple of weeks ago over in Europe. You didn't hear a word about this, and yet all the movers and shakers of the world were there. It's the same thing as the Bilderberger meetings. The average American has no idea what's really going on in the world. His attention is being focused on the coming war with Iraq, and he doesn't understand that while we're watching what's going on overseas, we're losing our freedom here at home.
Well, there's a lot of local neighborhood associations that are want to be non-governmental organizations now, non-profits. And I believe that they want to go into this designation so they can get grants, whether it's from Packard or from the federal or the state.
It means free money.
Free money, they say, but who pays the federal's monies? It's we, the taxpayers.
Right. Let's go to Joey, who's calling us from Capitola. Hi, Joey. How are you doing? Joey, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here.
Okay, I have a question or comment.
Pretty much a comment, and I just wanted to mention this to Jeannie, and I just wanted her to take a look at this, since she's a student of what's happening here, and likewise I am. The Santa Cruz Business Council, I looked up their website on a website that allows you to look up past websites, and I looked up their email address there, and it's scc.bc.org. Right? And I went to a www address. It goes to New York, to a county in New York. This is connected to the National Commission on Entrepreneurship. It's the same, it's all UN, it's a bunch of people. They don't quite say what they're about, but they all tell you they're into helping business. They're looking for entrepreneurs. And a second thing would be the ISO, International Standards Organization. I used to work at Silicon Graphics.
Mm-hmm.
And when these guys came in and did tests, our bosses really got worried, and it was a big deal when they came in. All they did is walk through the room, ask us a couple questions about how we run our computers and how we are managed. And then they give us ISO 9000 certification, which means, oh, we're certified, and we hang up big banners all over the place, have a big party.
Mm-hmm.
Point being is these standards organizations are now, people are waving these banners up as we're certified. Soon you probably won't be able to do business without being certified. And if you go to the ISO, International Standards Organization, they say they have standards for business and society. And if you go there, you'll find links to the UN and how they're planning on developing standards for society, and they want to implement them through standards and business. So it kind of ties in. I just want you to look at International Standards Organization. Keep an eye out.
Good,
okay,
I appreciate
Joey, thank
that.
You so much. Anything else you wanted to say?
No, that's pretty much it.
But I think, Joey, obviously you see how this fits together. All of this really is, you know, as we're watching what's happening overseas, we're worried about the terrorists. All of this supranational regulation is being imposed on the United States.
You know, one final thing. The pyramid with the eye.
Yes.
The pyramid with a star. You see these symbols in these organizations, these standards organizations.
Right.
They'll use an A, and then they'll put a star in the middle of the A.
Right.
Well, you'll see somewhere else where they just put the pyramid in it. It's the same thing, and I see it all over. Southern Pacific Railroad even used to have the railroad ties going through their seal, and it was a pyramid with the sun at the top.
Sure. Well, first, they understand the occult significance of this. They hide them in plain sight. People just look at it and shrug.
Yeah.
Never understanding that there have been, since the beginning of time, these secret societies all aimed at the ultimate goal,
yes,
the New World Order, the New World Religion. And, of course, it was our president's father who popularized this idea of the New World Order in 1990, saying, you know, of course, a war here, the first, the Gulf War, will, of course, make the United Nations work as it was always intended to. But actually, the idea and the wording actually had come from Alice Bailey in her writings, you know, during the early part of the 20th century. And she was a Luciferian who talked about the points of light that George Bush talked about in his inaugural address. And few people understood the significance of what he was saying, but every occultist and every Satanist in the world did.
And we just shouldn't doubt that it's happening. It's really happening. It's happening on all sides, in school, in business. It's happening at all levels. And I'm telling people, people need to tell people, and we need to keep informing more people.
And we're getting the word out, Joey. Keep it up.
All
God bless
right.
you. Thanks so
Take
much.
Care. Bye.
Let's go to Jeanette calling from Watsonville. Hi, Jeanette.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How about you?
I'm doing just great.
Good. Yeah, I'm going to say also that when I talk with people about what's happening, they say, oh, no, that could never happen here. And yet they know that there was something wrong. And they're just slowly being suffocated by really what's almost blatant at times.
Well, why don't you try to get them to listen to our programs if you can?
I do, but, you know, some people live in the city of Watsonville. It's hard for them to get...
Well, but they can get it on the Internet.
They can get
it on the Internet.
Oh, that's true.
And they can get it to 5 hours a day on the Internet. But or give them just a copy of a tape, Jeanette.
Yeah.
You know, if you can just get something like this. And where all the documentation is here. Mm-hmm. All they have to do is even go up on the Internet and look at these websites where they're so blatant. or have them go to the Eleusis Trust website or the Theosophical website or the Satanist website. Even the Satanists have websites right up there on the Internet. And of course, I guess our ministers never look at that because most of them never talk about Satan anymore.
No, fortunately, I do attend a Catholic church that does.
It's
in Los Gatos, but it does. And also, in terms of the Santa Cruz County Business Council, I know there's some businessmen in Watsonville who dropped their membership with the...
The Business Council?
Not the Business Council.
The Chamber of Commerce?
The Chamber of Commerce, thank you. And joined the Business Council because they were dissatisfied with the Chamber. So the Business Council came in, you know, the white knight in shining armor and saying they were going to help them with their problems and all. So they went and joined this group, and it's very hard for me to talk with these people because apparently to them they're doing a great job.
Well, what are they doing, Jeanette? What are they?
I don't know. I mean, I haven't talked with people for a while, to be honest with you. But to be specific, I don't know anymore.
Yeah.
What does the Business Council?
But
do,
I don't
Jeanie?
See them. I mean, I see them doing a lot of things around the area, supporting different groups, supporting different schools. Okay, it's coming back to me, having meetings with schools and things like that. But it seems to be more of a PC group to me than a real business group.
Well, that's it, because people are asking about the Santa Cruz County Business Council, and they say, well, it's kind of private. We want to protect our membership, and right now they're not giving membership out to the public.
Correct.
But the last thing I read, and it's been about 4 months since I've seen their name come in the Santa Cruz Sentinel newspaper, it was regarding widening the Highway 1. Mm-hmm. And they formed a committee, and they were going to be on that committee. But I believe what's happening now, the Santa Cruz County Business Council is not doing public meetings,
but
they're going with the meetings of the supervisors, the transportation committee, the water committee, and the education. That's what they, those three committees is the education, the water, and the businesses. That's what they're looking at.
Because I remember a couple years ago when I was attending more meetings, especially with schools, the business council members attended meetings at schools to help students find jobs in businesses, you know, to be trained, things like that. And
that sounds like workforce development.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then I think as we started talking more about the business council, they started becoming more and more quiet, more working in the background.
That's right.
Yeah.
They're quiet right now.
Okay, anything else to that?
Nope. Thank
okay,
you.
Thanks so much. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Our guest in studio is Jeanie Soderman. We're talking about, of course, how this whole sustainable concept fits into business. And, of course, they utilize people. You know, we've got all the business leaders here. And, of course, you have to be very successful to put up $1,000 or $2,000 or whatever amount of money to be on the executive committee. And, of course, you rub shoulders with all these leaders and good for business. But we're really going to help the community. But the question is, if they're pushing these sustainable concepts, this is not helping the community. If they're pushing workforce development, which I have nothing against children beginning to think what they're going to do, but when the schools are used not to allow the children to reach their potential, but to train them for a job for life so that they can serve the corporation rather than serving their own best interest, then this certainly is not in the favor favorable either to society or to the child or the individual. And we should be a society of individuals, not a society of collectivism, especially not collectivism dedicated to the corporate welfare.
I'd like to go back to, was it Joey that called regarding his research?
Right.
By the way, he did very good research, and he's just following the links, and that's great. He talked about ISO 9000, and they have different numbers like 14001, but this is the third-party certification of certifying the businesses or, say, production like a farmer raising strawberries. I happen to live part-time in Central America, and what they're doing now, and also in the United States, is the third-party certification. Let's just take coffee. And so they're saying, oh, we need bird-friendly coffee and have organic measures in the land. And so what's happening...
What is bird-friendly coffee?
Well, you can't have any pesticides or fertilizers, a certain type of fertilizers. Anything bird-friendly is you have to have a lot of trees that cover the coffee. And so the birds will go in the trees and support the habitat of the birds, and also it'll shade the coffee. That's what they mean by bird-friendly coffee. Here what we're finding in Central America is the processing plants are being taken over by the big producers, and that's the organic processing plants. So say you have a coffee plantation that is not following, say they have at least 50 regulations of being an organic coffee producer. And if you don't sign the contract, then you can't have your coffee processed at the local processing plant. And this is what eventually they will do, is they will control all the processing plants, whether it be beef or chicken or strawberries or any fruit or vegetable or food. And if you don't comply with the third-party certification of the United Nations, then you cannot sell your crops. And so you're going to be out of business.
And so basically then what they're really doing is having the elite, these people of great wealth, are taking over all the processing plants. Then, they, of course, they can control the price that's paid to the producer, and then they can control the price that, we will pay. And I know when the coffee had just gone down to a ridiculously low price there in Central America, it was still very, very high up here as far as it didn't affect the price we were paying, but it affected the price that the grower was being paid.
Oh, yeah. People that owe money to the bank, that have coffee plantations all over the world, they can't make enough money for trimming the grass around the trees and paying the workers to pick the coffee. They're in a negative cash flow. And so what happens, they can't make payments to the bank, and the bank takes over the land.
Gee.
And guess what? The land is being used for wildlife corridors. So they're taking it for the Agenda 21 biodiversity project.
No, of course, that's really, really great, because, of course, if you force the people off the land and then the bank gets it, why, then these nature groups can come in. So this is happening in Central America. This is not just in the United States. This is part of a worldwide program, Jeannie?
Oh, it certainly is. World government, worldwide program.
And, of course, it's really all it has to do with the biodiversity treaty, the wildlands, where half the land will be put into certainly wilderness areas, and nobody will go into that. Is that actually happening then in other countries as well as here?
Oh, yes. They're looking specifically at the rivers, and, of course, the rivers are the water.
Oh, my goodness. I just got a letter the other day. Friends of Soquel Creek.
Uh-oh.
Oh, we just want to, everybody, $10, you can be a friend of Soquel Creek. I don't have time. How would you like to join the group of Friends of Soquel Creek?
No, thank you. I'll tell you why. That's a red flag. Whenever you hear friends of Soquel Creek, friends of the river, beware. That is a front group for the multinational corporations, even though they say they're a small environmental group and they want to help the environment. Beware of that word, friends. No, that's a red flag, Dr. Stan.
Okay, fine. Well, of course, I wanted you to go there to tell me what's going on. But I know very well that this is what it's all about. What they are doing, of course, is blocking any efforts to have dams or reservoirs or store the water, so that we will, of course, if we don't have any water stored, why then, of course, you can have your saltwater intrusion, and then, of course, you can stop people from using their wells. And you set up this whole chain of disastrous results that all come really from the organized effort to block doing what would be logical so that man could live here in this region. And they blocked the development of the reservoirs, from the Zayati reservoirs to the other reservoirs. And they do this knowing full well that they're creating a crisis, but their goal is control by crisis. And then, of course, my goodness, how are we going to solve this problem? And then they spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on studies like, how long have they been studying widening Highway 1? It's not because they need more studies or environmental impact evaluations or determining whether we're going to bother the snails. And this is all part of a program of delay so that people will be bumper to bumper, so that people will become frustrated and angry. But, of course, it's controlled by chaos.
Oh, yeah, this delay of making Highway 1 wider, just money goes out for studies. In the end, they're really not going to do anything because they want, first of all, in the local Agenda 21, they want to put a toll road on Highway 17 going over the mountain.
Well, they really want to get you out of your car because cars are not sustainable. You say that's crazy. Well, but we're not dealing with people who are rational. We're not looking at people who look at the world the way that you and I do.
Well, in Local Agenda 21 in Santa Cruz County, California, it does state specifically cars are unsustainable. And so, yes, they want us out of the cars so we can walk to our local job. And it could be in the fields or in these cluster projects where they have these businesses together.
But don't feel bad. The bureaucrats have because they don't have to pay for their cars and their gas. They get them for nothing. But of course, as common folks, and people say, "Here you're being, flippant." No, I'm not. These people look at the way they believe in a ruling elite. The elite knows the best way for us as common folks. This is the very essence of what socialism is. Unfortunately, many of these people who are playing the game now may very well find themselves in the same concentration camps as Jeannie and I may well be in one day soon. You say we couldn't have this? Well, ladies and gentlemen, you go up to the FEMA site, and they are planning on relocation camps for people, because of the possibility of terrorism here. And, of course, they're planning on spending billions of dollars for the land and development of relocation camps. If you haven't seen the amazing clips that Radio Liberty has, three videos, fascinating information goes into this whole long-range plan. We're talking about the destruction of America. All under this name of sustainable development.
Well, it does come from the very top, and the literature says, well, we're decentralizing. We're going to have the people make their comments, and it's the community that's going to be regulating their own community. No, that's not going to happen because we have all these consensus groups. And what happens in the consensus meetings of these community meetings, we have a wonderful facilitator. And they really work the crowd. You make your comments. They write it on a blackboard or a big paper pad. And then you see the end report in a couple of weeks. And it's completely different. Your input was never put into that report. Here locally in Corralitos, there was a remake of the Corralitos Village Plan three times. So I go down the planning department and ask Mark Deming, now, can I see the Corralitos latest plan? Oh, I don't have it. And so the facilitator has it. I go to the facilitator of the Corralitos community plan. Do you have the latest draft of the community plan? No, don't know where it is. Dr. Stan, it's all gone. We don't know where it is. So here again, what they're doing is when the people find out, they go and hide. They run and hide. And the facilitator is actually working for the United States Agricultural Department. And so there again, it's conflict of interest because the USDA is a member of the United Nations. It's called the IUCN. Well, it's actually a nonprofit group, but it's the International Union for the Conservation of Nature. And to belong to that group, you have to sign a contract saying you will abide by the principles of the International Agenda 21 and all the UN treaties. So here we have a facilitator that's tied in with the IUCN, and now we can't even find the plan, the Corralitos plan. It's gone. so we don't know what happened to it. It is coming from the very top, and this is a quote by Murray Strong, General Secretary to the United Nations, the Earth Summit, very powerful. Quote, what if a small group of these world leaders were to conclude that the principal risk to the Earth comes from the actions of the rich countries? In order to save the planet, the group decides, isn't the only hope for the planet that the industrialized civilizations collapse? Isn't it our responsibility to bring that about? And I believe that's what they're doing now. They're collapsing the Western civilization, and they're collapsing the middle class that creates the Western civilization, our quality of life and our way of life, which was wonderful for 200 years.
I believe you're absolutely right, Jeannie, and I believe these wicked people know exactly what they're doing. And before this war is over, the living standards of the average American will be lowered considerably. The freedom as we've known it will become a remembrance of things past. And the only thing that's going to counter this is if there is a revival in America, if you out there in the listening audience will help us to get this information out. I think probably one of the best things available is something called the Sustainable Development Syllabus, and it contains a great deal of information that Jeannie has collected, her analysis of the Global Biodiversity Assessment that came out of the Earth Summit, the Second Earth Summit in 1992, her analysis of the World Bank water policy. If you'd like to learn more about sustainable development, the Sustainable Development Syllabus, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you'd like, of course, to have more information on the Agenda 21, we have the Santa Cruz Agenda 21 here available. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. If you like information, you need to find out, and you say, I don't believe this. Well, you better start doing your homework. These people know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want you to know what they're doing. What are your parting thoughts for us, Jeannie?
Well, especially one organization, the Union of Concerned Scientists, they're supposed to be this peer review group that knows what's good for the Earth. And this is a quote by Helen Caldicott, and she's very big on this Union of Concerned Scientists. She says, free enterprise really means rich people getting richer. They have the freedom to exploit and psychologically rape their fellow human beings in the process. Capitalism is destroying the Earth. And they are combining communism with a new form of capitalism, and it's corporate socialism.
And of course, Helen Caldicott didn't realize she was working for the very people she opposed, as it is with most of the communists out there, foolish, idealistic, useful idiots in their way of thinking. Because, of course, you only need to go back to the writings of a woman named Dobbs. I think it was not Sigma Dobbs, but anyway. She was actually a member of the Central Committee of the Communist Party, and I quote her in my book.
Bella Dodd?
Bella Dodd, mm-hmm. Yes. And, of course, eventually she realized that she was working for the very people she opposed. She asked during the Second World War, how will we find out what the official party line is from Moscow if we lose contact with you? And they said, oh, well, you go to the Waldorf Astoria, there are three people there that you can ask, and they'll tell you the official Communist Party line. They were all major capitalists. And then the light went on, and Bella Dodd realized she'd given her whole life for a lie. Well, we're out of time. This is the time we simply ask you to pray for America, pray for revival. Pray for our leaders, for our ministers, but please remember to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until next evening, when we'll be back with you once again, this is Dr. Stan saying good night, and may the Lord be with you. pretty crowded coming over the hill?
Yes. Crowded everywhere for some reason. Sometimes you can breeze right through it.
You have to call in 20 minutes to get here, and it's work time and bother to get home. I appreciate so much your calling.
Definitely. Absolutely.
Let's check my sound on the internet. You know, it's like in your face. They're a huge network for the left. And I clicked on beacons. They're two beacons of light. And they gradually came towards the trade towers.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see them coming gradually. And then no more. I mean, they play games with you. And they got copyright, copy left. They do all that.
Did you notice this last one? Better. Kind of love and light?
Yeah.
That comes right out of this.
Oh.
The one? The door where you... This thing.